Is the Chicken Big Mac still a Big Mac? It's got two chicken patties, the pickles, the lettuce, ooh, the cheese, the sesame seed bun, and it's got the sauce. It's not a Big Mac. Get it while you can. And participate in McDonald's for a limited time.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Yeah, we back. We back, man. Happy Thursday.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the fourth installment of our how-to series. This one is important.
Yes.
For a variety of different reasons, but a lot of times we talk about financial literacy, and that starts at early ages. So teaching kids about money is extremely important, and people don't really know how to go about it a lot of times. And we actually developed a curriculum that we actually have in some school districts now, and that actually goes through a lot of different modules, videos, and it kind of explains things. So being that we did that and have a history in education, we wanted to have an episode. We've always been asked a long time, is the curriculum going to be made public, or, you know, tips about teaching kids about money, or how do I get my child into stocks? So this is going to be a conversation. Not everything, obviously, it's an hour format, but it's going to be a conversation that'll give parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, an opportunity to have talking points to educate children on finances, because it's something that's vitally important. And if you're not educated on finance and you have to play catch up when you're in your 20s and 30s, you're really, really behind the eight ball. So we have our good friend and colleague, Travis Brown, who's actually a principal in New York City. And so the person that actually worked with us to develop the curriculum has been an educator for over 20 years. And somebody's just very, very high regarded in the world of education. So when developing a curriculum, you can't just write something. You got to actually have it, you know, vetted, checked, and go through different guidelines, stuff like that. It's a very tedious process. So he helped us on the education side as far as the school side. So we thought that he'd be a perfect person to have on with this, on this conversation as far as teaching. So yes, let's bring him on.
Trav, what's good, my brother?
What's going on, y'all?
I'll reiterate what Shadi just said, man. It's a full circle moment. This started out in the classrooms. So to be back in the classroom in a setting was pretty exciting to see the people coming together for this curriculum. But coming from an educational background, there is a difference, like you said, between writing a lesson plan, writing a unit plan, and putting together a curriculum, man. So we thank you wholeheartedly for your assistance in that, man. We couldn't have done this process without you, my brother.
No doubt. I appreciate it. And I got to tell everybody, I was just really excited to work with the two of you, because what y'all are doing in terms of revolutionizing financial education. And as y'all said, if we're starting when people are 35, 40, we're way behind. Young people have nothing but time on their hands. And this, when we talk about things like compounding interest, when we talk about investing early, the time is now for young people. And doing this was just an honor, because when we bring that down, I think that's the only way we can change the game and really get this financial revolution, a snowball effect. So thank you both of you again.
Yeah, Trav, your background is education now, but there was a financial journey that you was on earlier, correct?
Yeah, that's the big story, and how I really got excited about this. And everybody that knows me and will listen to the story, long story long here, you know, when I started out in my career, I was part of an IPO and didn't know what the hell an IPO was. You know, 21 years old, fresh out of college, you know, they tell us to get a job. So I did that. And I was just at the right time, you know, in the market, sometimes timing is everything. I was right there. So I received 2,000 shares of a stock at $8 a share. Later, a year later, I sold that at $10 a share. And I cry every day because that share price now is well over $300. So that's kind of my story and my entry into the market and why I want to share that with other young people. Because if there was a show like Earn Your Leisure at the time that said, hold on, hold those assets, hold that for 10, 20 years, I probably wouldn't be here right now.
Good chance. Probably good chance. But we're thankful that you are.
Definitely.
Yes. So, all right. So we're going to go into it. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff. But first, I think it's important to kind of talk, to educate adults and parents about, you know, how they look at money, how they train to think about money, right? Because a lot of times the education starts from a miseducation that adults may have, right? So let's start there as far as on the mindset concepts that have to be corrected a lot of times before we actually go into the actual item.
Yeah, so let's I think this is where we start. As I'm an educator by trade, I started out in education, but we know our first teacher is are our families, our parents. We know that. That's who we spend a lot of time with. That's who brings us up. And the challenge in our communities, as everybody knows, is that when we don't know about money, we're not able to impart those lessons onto our young people. And that's where we have to start. We have to start breaking that cycle. So one thing, I'll jump into the PowerPoint so we can jump right into. Before we start talking about the parent piece, let's just really, the stats are very clear in terms of why we need financial literacy in schools. And I'm going to get to the parent piece in a second, but we keep citing these stats over and over again. 48% of adults don't have an emergency fund. 61% of adults live paycheck to paycheck. We know about the college debt, and the point number five I want to create is that we know that financial literacy is the contributing factor of the wealth gap in America. So I share all of this to say, you know, we've been really good at listening. And what I mean by that is that message around go to college and get a job. That's that message that I know our families told us when we were going up. They told us, mm-hmm. Go to college, get that job. I'm pretty sure, Rashad, you heard that. I know you have issues with college education. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that later. But the key message was to go to college and get a job. We listen, but we're still broke. We're still broke. Kids are coming out of college with debt. Kids are coming out of college where their degrees don't pay them. But we listen to this message over and over again. So that doesn't work for us. So getting a good job doesn't equate to financial freedom. But we know that money is the common denominator of no matter what job you get. So whether you're a doctor, lawyer, whatever, we know that's the common denominator. So I think we need a new message. And it starts with, the new message has to be financial freedom. So it's not about getting a job. It's about getting financially free. And to Rashad, to your point, that really starts at home with this idea of what we call a hidden curriculum. The hidden curriculum is what we talk about, where there's information and skills that is learned, but not directly through teaching. So you may think, like, what is that? How do we learn something not by being directly taught? It's inherited from our parents. That's why we say when you go into someone's refrigerator and you see the type of tomato paste, the ketchup they use, they're probably using the one that their parents use. Your detergent is probably the detergent that your parent used. The same thing with money habits. So this is the big right here. If our parents are our first teachers, we adopt their money mindsets, their behaviors, and also their financial traumas. The way we see the world about money and the value of money comes from our parents. So kids get a front row seat of what we think about money, how we use money, how we spend money every day in our household. And being an educator, I'm on the front line. The first time, and I tell people this all the time, the first time kids, especially Black and brown kids, learn about money is 12th grade. Mm-hmm. Where parents have to get transparent about how much they make for financial aid purposes, going to college purposes. And then young people start to see for the first time, whoa, my parent makes a lot of money or my parent doesn't make a lot of money. But these conversations can happen a lot earlier so that young people have a more realistic viewpoint on finances and about money. But again, we can only teach what we know. And we know that this hidden language of money is passed down from father to son, mothers to daughters, mothers to sons. And a lot of Black and brown people don't have that knowledge. So our young people is at a disadvantage. And it's like we say, it's much easier to build strong children than fix broken adults. But we hear all the time, let's fix your credit. Let's fix your finances. This word fix is so big in our space for Black and brown people. And we need to change that. And we need to build from the young. But first, we have to get our parents to understand that there's some things that they have to come to terms with and they have to learn and they have to sit back and watch and observe, because young people learn from them. So yeah. The more you learn and the more you do and the more you educate yourself, just by being there, they're going to actually learn and get smarter about money.
Trav, that's interesting. As a leader of a school, this is kind of like a two-part question. Obviously, coming from education, people always ask, why did I leave? And I'm like, yo, I started to feel complicit inside of it, right? Like, I don't know if this dream or the so-called dream that we have of getting the house and the picket fence, going to college, is ideal anymore. Two things. As you see this younger generation, right, you're seeing kids 7th grade through 12th grade. You're seeing it year to year. Are you starting to see a mindset shift inside of your young adults, right? I know you guys offer things that the average school doesn't. And what's the mindset from the parents that you're seeing right now, right? Because this is a financial awakening, we like to call it now, where we're starting to see adults learn a little bit more, kids are learning. What are you seeing from both aspects?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're still seeing that for Black and brown families, especially in the communities that I serve, they're still not tapped in, or there's a lot of misinformation. Our families are getting a lot of information off of social media, which isn't great in some circumstances, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. Like, I think the pandemic where everybody was in, like a lot of people ran to the stock market. They ran to investing, they ran to these things. But just like everything else, education is key and research is key. But do our families have the financial mentors and the financial resources to actually get the right information? That's why I respect so much platform like yours and the work that y'all are doing, because you're bringing real information that's credible to people. But again, as Black and brown people, we're still susceptible to misinformation, running with social media, meme stocks, things like that. And that's why education is important. And that's why we have to make sure that it's happening in schools in a credible way. Yeah, you were with that. Again, that's what we're talking about in terms of our families. They have to understand our kids learn as we do. And that's really important as we look to move our young people forward in this financial journey. Our parents just have to understand that these skills are inherited from them. So their mindsets are really important around money. So let's take for example, when I was raised, my household's mindset was a scarcity mindset. We always held on to every dollar. We felt that we never had enough money to buy food, to buy goods. So, and I adopted that from my mother. And just because we grew up in projects and we didn't have a lot of money. So I looked at money in terms of as a scarce resource. That trickles down to as I get older and what I think about money. So I had to actually dismantle those trauma bonds around money. And this is happening in a lot of families in our community. So the first step is really just to understand where you are, do a self-reflection on your attitudes, your behavior, and your mindset around money, so you're not passing that on to your children. So now, one of the things that we also need to talk about, and I know this is a concept that the two of you really stand by, is this idea of each one teach one. And this is where we get into why we need financial literacy in our schools. And this is why I'm such a big advocate on it, is because we know just clearly Black and brown people, we're social learners. We get together and we learn in groups. This is something that y'all promote. This is something that we need to promote out there, because a lot of our people, Black and brown people, actually are just getting into the market. So we need a collective to really talk and share information. Schools provide the format for that. I'm a big advocate of pushing this stuff in schools, because it's a space where a lot of young people are together and we can grab and they can talk about ideas. Part of what we need to do that's different than other financial curriculums and where things have failed in the past is that oftentimes we don't talk about the context and history behind our lack of finances. So if we don't study the past, we become victims of it. So Black and brown people have a troubled past with finances. We've been left out of the finances for a very long time. So we need to talk about that as a community. And then another great piece is students, when they start learning in schools, they can actually broker those conversations at home. So when we talk about each one, teach one, sometimes our families don't know how to start these conversations with our young people around finances, but there's nothing more powerful than a child going home and saying, "Mom, do you invest? Mom, do you know about compounding interest? Dad, do you know what a mutual fund is?" A child can lead the way in a lot of these communities that have been broken for a while. And that's why it's really important for us to bridge this gap by bringing financial literacy in schools. And the last thing that I'll touch on to this point is, if not us, then who? Mm-hmm. If they wanted us to be educated on this stuff, and I'm saying that they, banks, financial institutions, this stuff would have been done already. We can't expect financial organizations to teach us. We have to save us. And that's what you two gentlemen are doing, is being part of saving us. If we're talking about Black and brown communities and getting smarter about finances, you can't wait for outsiders to teach you about money. It's not their responsibility. It's our responsibility. We have to build agency to really start talking about financial literacy and building up our own communities. Again, how long are we going to wait for other people to build up our communities?
Yeah, it's like that age-old question, right? Like, people always talk about, I'm going to leave it up to the school to educate my kids. And I always tell, I try to encourage people, like, learning doesn't stop when you walk out those doors. Like, those four walls of your classroom shouldn't be the only place you're learning. But it makes me think about that age-old adage, right? People will say that the system's broken or the system doesn't work. And then there's other people that are saying that, yeah, the system is actually working exactly how it's designed. Why would I teach you about money when I'm always going to need somebody to prey on, or I'm always going to need somebody to employ? I'm never teaching these things. So what are your thoughts around that? Obviously, being a leader of a school and of a community, right? Because principals are not just in the building, right? Like, you're the leader of the community, right? When there's an issue going on that happens in the park, you're going to be alerted because it could be your student, right? So, like, as a leader of a community, what's your thoughts around that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the big thing here, I think principals and other community leaders, we have a great responsibility to our people, and we have a lot of power. But I think sometimes we take a short-sighted approach to our problems. Money solves a lot of problems that you both have always said. But let me just give you a case in point that we see in a lot of schools, and I would love to hear your take on this, right? When a child is hungry in school, or a child doesn't have clothes, or a child is in temporary housing, what do you think the school does?
What do they do?
Yeah.
They call the parents? If they're hungry, you said?
If a child or family is hungry, a child and family, they don't have the clothes, what do school leaders typically do?
They call services, child services.
And they provide those things.
Yeah. I was gonna say, yeah. Most times when you see situations like that, they're gonna rally around that child.
Yeah. So across America, in Black and brown communities and impoverished communities, when there's a problem, let's say food scarcity, lack of clothing and things like that, we provide. You see nothing in communities like the Bronx, Detroit, wherever. You see schools building pantries for students and families. You see book bag give backs. You see all these drives. Y'all probably been part of some, right? Mm-hmm. That's a short-term approach because I think it's necessary and needed, but it's not sufficient because the worst thing I want to see is somebody that I'm giving out food at 7 coming back to me at 17, coming to me back at 27. So I think as community leaders and as principals, we have to take a longer view. Let's teach them to fish instead of giving them the fish. And they may need the fish temporarily because hunger is a real thing. But as we're giving them the fish, let's double back and teach them how to fish also. And I think that's where financial literacy comes in. Our communities have a lot of problems, but I think we take a short-sighted view in terms of just giving them the thing they need. And I think that is important. Let's not get that, where if a child is hungry, let's feed the child. But let's give them another type of food that says, you're going to be hungry now. You're probably going to be hungry again tomorrow, and I'm going to feed you. But my biggest mission as a school or as a community is to make sure in 5-10 years, you're not going to be hungry again. You're not going to be on social services because you start to understand how to save money, grow money, invest money. And I think that's where our communities, especially communities of color, can really level up and ratchet up what we're doing in schools. So again, it's wonderful what we're doing in terms of providing the needs around food scarcity, because hunger is a real thing. The challenge is it can't stop there. That's necessary, but not sufficient. We have to become part of this financial revolution in our schools because it's the way to grow wealth and stop a 7-year-old from coming back in 15 years to grab a loaf of bread.
For sure. So, all right. So now getting into some actionable items, I want to talk even off script for a little bit about like different ways, because like I feel like gamification is vitally important when it comes to teaching anybody about anything, but especially children, right? So that's probably one of the first things that I think parents can do is actually gamify finances and make it relatable. So to give you some examples, of course, there's games like Monopoly. That's a very good game. But just like, if you could create your own game, like you could have budget battles, right? And see, the budget battle is good because that actually forces people to learn vital skills early. So what a budget battle is let's say you have two kids, right? And it's two parents and two kids, and we're playing budget battle, right? And we have fake money. We'll use like $5,000, right? But then you have a list of items that everybody gets, and you have rent or a mortgage payment at $1,500. You have gas at $100. You have jeans at $250. So what you do is you put necessities on there, but then you also put things that aren't necessities, right, on there as well. So you give everybody the sheet, right? And then now the sheet in total might equal $10,000. So you're not going to be able to spend all of the money on one thing. So you have to actually pick what's important to you. So usually a child that doesn't have full understanding of life, right, they're going to pick travel. They're going to pick clothes. They're going to pick food. They're going to pick going to Disney World. So now you explain to them the consequences of that, right? Where it's like, okay, like now you spent your $5,000, and nowhere in this $5,000 does it have anything to do with housing. Nowhere in this $5,000 does it have anything to do with transportation. So now you had a good time and you went to Disney World and you have a pair of jeans that you like, but now you no longer have anywhere to live, right? And it's rewarded as far as whoever makes the best financial decision actually could potentially get real money. So like the winner of the game gets $100, let's say, right? So now what that does is, A, it teaches them early the importance of prioritizing things, right? It also teaches them early the value of creating a budget. Creating a budget is probably one of the most underrated things when it comes to finance, right? It's like insurance. It's not sexy. Nobody wants to talk about it, but it's vitally important. When you look at Fortune 500 companies, there's no Fortune 500 company that operates without a budget. The United States government operates with a budget, but most people have no idea how much money is coming in or how much money is coming out, right? Just think about that. Like if you were the CEO of a company and somebody asked you how much revenue did you have in this year and you gave them a vague answer, and then they said, more importantly, how much money was going out? What was your expenses? And you have no answer at all. How long do you think that CEO would last, right? Even you run a school, right? You have to know how much you guys are spending. You spend for school uniforms, you spend for lunch. Like that's vitally important to know. Most people don't have any idea about that because it was never taught to them. It's not a complicated thing to teach, but it is vitally important. And one thing about habits is that the habits that you develop young usually carry with you for a long time, right? So it's like eating. This is why it's very important to introduce a healthy lifestyle early, because it's difficult to make somebody a vegan after they ate McDonald's for 25 years, right? This is why cigarette companies used to target kids at a very young age, because they know that if you get a child, you get a lifelong customer. This is why McDonald's has Ronald McDonald and they have kids parties. They target young people because usually the habits that you make early, you continue for the rest of your life. But if you can make good habits early, you can continue for the rest of your life. So the budget game is something that is a very good way to gamify. You can incentivize it as well. But early, you can teach people the value, teach kids the value of what they're spending their money on and the importance of having a disciplined budget, right? As opposed to spending money frivolously, right? And you have to explain to them, like, why, since you didn't do this, the consequences of you not doing this is this, right? So that's something that I think is important. Before we continue, I just wanted to kind of start with some level of gamification, because I do think that is a major part in the learning process. And like I said, that's something that you can do a family outing, you can have a spreadsheet, you can put on the internet, you can make it as complex or as simple as you want. It's up to you, but it's really not difficult. And if you are playing games like Monopoly, I think it's important to fully explain the Monopoly game, right? Like explain, you know, why buying property is so vitally important, because you're getting rent, right? So in the middle of the game, just stop. You're going to learn about finances just by playing the game, but I think it's important to kind of stop the game in intervals and explain, like, okay, now the reason why you want to have these houses is because you're collecting rent and you're a landlord, right? So now landlords, everybody in real estate, right? Everybody participates in real estate unless you're homeless. So I think it's important to teach children that early. Everybody participates in real estate unless you're homeless. So you say, okay, now you can participate and pay rent to somebody, right? Now, every month you have to pay. And what you're actually doing is paying their mortgage, which is a loan from the bank, which you learn that in the game. But the other side of that is that you have a landlord who's actually collecting rent. So there's only two ways that you can play this game. You can either pay or you can collect, right? That's the two ways to go about it. So explaining why it's always going to be better, usually, to be on the collecting side as opposed to the paying side, I think is something that in a game like Monopoly, when you fully explain it, break it down, now you start to have more of an appreciation as opposed to just playing a game, just trying to win, right? Like I said, it's still beneficial in that way. But if you can actually start to explain it, even in very elementary, easy to understand ways to go about it, and even the strategy of buying the same street, right? That's a strategy. That's a real estate strategy. It's like, okay, we want all blue. We want Boardwalk and we want all of those blue properties, because usually it's going to work better if you buy real estate close to each other, right? There's a reason why most people that have large real estate portfolios, it's in clusters. They don't have like one house in Michigan, one house in Albany, because you learn the market. You get familiar with the town government, right? You have incentives. It's easier for you to manipulate the situation when you have things close by in a cluster. That's another thing that you learn in Monopoly. Like, it's more beneficial to own a set as opposed to just owning everything randomly, right? So little stuff like that, when you start to train children and even adults, but you start to train them in the form of gamification, and then you're explaining it to them as you're actually playing, I think that's a major step in them getting to understand the dynamics of how money and business works.
I agree. And I think once you start to gamify something, young people get really, we see it in education all the time. And I think that's the entryway to actually putting our money where our mouth is. And one of the easiest ways to jump in and do it for real now is through an allowance.
Right.
And that's a number. And that's a really, when we talk about gamification as one, I would say coming right in terms of second is terms of like, now how do we really get in the market and really put our money into it? And one thing that allowance does, because a lot of families, a lot of parents do allowances with young people, and there are different ways you can look at your allowance. But the biggest thing is, and that where we get a really big advantage is you get kids to start understanding the value of money. Before an allowance is introduced, money comes from out of the blue. It comes out of your pocket. It comes out of a machine, an ATM machine. Young people have no concept and no value of money there. So we hear parents scream all the time, you think money grows on trees? And the answer is yes, because we ask for it and we get it. And that builds a sense of entitlement in young people. So when parents, that's why I'm a big advocate of putting an allowance structure in, so young people start to associate money with work and money with hard work, that I get money when I do some form of physical labor or even knowledge labor. So we see allowances being connected to doing chores. That's the most common one, connected to chores. There's pros and cons to that, of course, in terms of paying kids for being in a communal space, but that's the most common one. But then we start to see that it's connected to more knowledge work. Like, we're going to pay you $10 if you read a certain number of pages a day or a week, or the number of A's you get in school. So we're connecting, again, money to some sort of work. And I want to just highlight, it could be the physical labor of making your bed, taking out the trash, or connecting it to knowledge work, which is really important, of course, because we're in a knowledge economy. We want young people to get smarter. So it's connected to there. The third way that's getting more speed and traction is giving an allowance to actually play the game of money. So it's not connected to something you do or output. It's connected to, I'm going to give Troy, I'm going to give you $100 because I want you to learn what to do with the money. So it's not connected. So every week you get $100. So now you have a certain amount of money, and now we can start to have a conversation around, with this $100, how are you going to budget? To your point, Rashad, you're getting $100 a week. How are you going to budget?
Well, another thing that you can do for that to incentivize learning is, because let's be honest, right? You have to give people incentives for them to be motivated a lot of times, especially kids. So it's like educating them on different figures that are important as well. But so it's like, okay, I need you to do a 2-page report on 10 different people. If every time you complete this report, I'll give you $25, right? But these people are going to be business people because they already know who LeBron James is. They already know who Rihanna is. So I need you to research who Robert Smith is, right? And I need you to write a 2-page report, and I'll give you $25 when that report is completed. Right. You're incentivizing their education and their learning. Now they're not looking at it like it's punishment, because nobody's going to be overly excited at 12 years old to learn about who he is. I'm just being honest. Right. But when you give them some monetary gain from it, now they have no choice, even if they don't like it or not. And the good thing about that is that even that they still probably won't be enthusiastic about doing it, but it's already done. And now they'll it's in their brain now, right? And you do that for 10 weeks straight. Now you pick Robert Smith, you pick David Stewart, you pick a variety of different people that have reached high levels of success in business, right? And these are people that they're never going to learn about in school, and they're never going to learn about on their own until they get older and they might have, you know, just some interest in that. But if you expose them to that early, not only are you educating, you're killing a few birds in one stone with this, right? Not only are you educating them on who these people are, it's like Black History Month, right? Where we have to learn who, you know, different people are. We had to learn who Martin Luther King was. We had no choice. Like, you know, they taught us it, right? And then that gave us an appreciation for the story. So when you learn who Robert Smith is, a few things happens. A, it broadens your horizon on success because you realize that there's other people that's successful other than just what the media is telling you. It also educates you on things that you didn't know because you're going to learn about private equity and you probably never even heard of that as a kid, right? And then it's also going to potentially lead an interest on the career path side as well, right? And like I said, that these are seeds that you just plant now. It might not be fully, you might not be involved in this right now today, but by doing this intentionally, you got to be intentional with learning, right? So if you're doing this with your child intentionally, now they really have no choice but to be highly educated on people that the vast majority of society doesn't even know. Just think about that. If you did that for 10 weeks, right, and you took some of the wealthiest, some of the most successful Black people in America that's not in sports and entertainment, right, just by doing that for 10 weeks, right, and you paid them $25, that would be, you know, a couple hundred dollars. In the grand scheme of things, it's not going to, you know, make or break the situation. They would learn, they would be more educated on those people than 90% of adults. That's a fact. 90% of adults won't even know who those people are, let alone be able to have enough information to write a page or a 2-page report about them.
I agree. Yeah. And yeah. I think what you bring up, which as you were speaking, is this idea that we use in sports a lot. And it's this idea of hero talk. When you talk to young people, you talk, it's called hero talk or role model talk. You say mm-hmm. something like, what would LeBron James do? Because they know so much about LeBron James. So now when you get these new mentors from researching and learning about people, when a young person gets a lot of money, you can say now, which with your understanding of Robert Smith, what would Robert Smith do? Mm-hmm. So it changed the conversation. And it or what would Troy and Rashad do in this situation? So mentor talk or hero talk is deeply connected with acquiring new skills, but also pausing and thinking about what someone else would do in a given situation and providing learning to give you insight in terms of what you think you should do next. Because oftentimes young people don't have that step back moment to say, let me think about what such and such would do in this situation. So when we talk about decision making, we do it automatically as adults. We think about what our friends would do, what people that we think are smarter than us would do, what people close to us would do. Young people don't do that so much, or they do it. They don't have the mentors. So now we're giving the mental mentors to say, I got $10,000 from a birthday gift. I actually have a mentor or someone to look up to figure out what do I think they would do in this situation to really guide their decisions. So I think that's an excellent strategy around teaching them to go out there and learn about other people, financial titans, smart people, entrepreneurs, because it gives them a mental model to see the world. It gives them a different perspectives to see the world and also see the world of money, which is really important and which we're typically lacking.
Yeah, and it brings up a couple of things inside of that conversation. The movie Hidden Figures just comes to mind, right? When we figured out what these young ladies were doing, it was like, this is astronomical. Like, we should have known these stories for so long. And when you do that, now you uncover more of these hidden. They're in plain sight. They're not even hidden, but the greatness hasn't been displayed. When you were talking about the incentivized learning, it just made me think. I'm like, when you start school, everything is incentivized learning, right? When you're in kindergarten, when you're first grade at elementary level, it's how do I get the sticker on my test? Or how do I get to go to the teacher and get a Jolly Rancher because I got 100 on my spelling? You know what I mean? It's always the incentive. Even as you get into the secondary, early secondary, sixth, middle schoolish, there's still positive behavior, instructional systems, and there's a reward system. The incentive is there. It feels like in high school, that changes. It's like what becomes now the tangible incentive? And if you think about how we're learning, because that's important too, activity-based learning, not as prevalent. Project-based learning, not as prevalent. What we do have is the structure, sit in front of the teacher and listen for 45 minutes. How do we, and this did just open up a thought, how do we incentivize it and to make it more encouraging where educators feel like this is something that we should be doing? And how do we from, I guess, from a leadership team decide, like, what is the new incentive for this level of education?
Yeah, I think that's a big question in education. Like, what's the purpose of traditional education now? I think we have to start answering that again. And we know that, especially on a college front, a lot of the degrees that young people are getting is disconnected from the labor force. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and what do we need to, how do we need to rethink that as well? I think it's really important to understand that there's value in learning and becoming smarter about something, right? So I don't want to miss that point, really. And we need people to learn a lot of disciplines. I think the challenge is that we're warehousing young people in a school, right, in a complex, and telling them to move this one way and not tapping into their curiosities and interests. And I think that's where we start to, where the system breaks down, where we're sitting young people in a complex saying, sit in these rows, just do this. And we actually don't care about what you think, what you want to do. And I think that's where a lot of challenges come in. And then we duplicate that into a college piece as well. And young people are going to college and they're graduating, especially Black and brown kids. And then they're looking at us like, now what? I don't want to do this. This is not exciting to me anymore. But I think that's where financial literacy comes in even more importantly. Like, when you're financially free, you get to make decisions. There's freedom in that. You get to learn what you want to learn. You get to figure out things you want to figure out. And honestly, also, you get to start stuff. I think the biggest thing in education that we have to change is, and we see it in different types of schools, they're asking different questions. What do you want to create? What do you want to build? What do you want to disrupt? What do you want to redesign? And we're asking Black and brown kids, we're not even asking the questions, we're telling them what they need to learn. And I think we have to start thinking about what's the purpose of education, because we're just in a new world. And when we talk about entrepreneurship, we're not getting entrepreneurs out of our schools, because we're creating workers. Our system is set up for workers. So Earn Your Legion, the platform, we talk about entrepreneurship, but as our parents and our educators have to understand, they lose curiosity as they move through our education system.
The kid who's the entrepreneur in the school is the kid who's, he's more likely to get in trouble, right? For creating an entrepreneurial, even if he was selling candy, or if he was selling hats, or he was selling t-shirts inside the school, he's gonna end up in the principal's office.
Yeah, we don't teach him how to scale this thing, how to think about marketing, how to think about how to do it legally, right? Where they can grow those curiosities. So we have to really reimagine what education should look like, especially for Black and brown people, if we want to create more entrepreneurs in our system, create more economic advancement in our communities. They need to break stuff. They need to break shit. They need to tinker with stuff.
And I think also, because I know we're going to go through some videos as far as on the curriculum side, but it's important to have field trips. Mm-hmm. That's imperative. And I feel like, you know, even for me, like, you know, I went to Wall Street with my dad. This is before 9/11. So this is when you can actually walk around Wall Street. And, you know, it was just inspiring to see. But I feel like even from a history standpoint, it's important even to go to Black Wall Street. That's important to kind of see, you know, what history, why it was so vitally important for white power structure to destroy Black business, because that's a real threat. Right. And to see a thriving Black community and the history of how it was destroyed, like, that's something that's vitally important. We learn about slavery a lot, but we don't learn about business. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the story. That's part of the legacy also. But taking trips related to business is important.
Yeah.
And then also movie night. like that's how I actually got into finances. Well, granted, I'm a little different because I was already interested in business. Everybody's not interested in business, and everybody's not going to become an entrepreneur, but you could at least introduce it to them. And one of the best ways to introduce anything to anybody is through entertainment. This is why we're so intrigued with so many negative things, because we've been introduced to it through entertainment, whether it's through movies or music, right? Think about it. Like a lot of the negative things that permeate in our culture, we've been introduced to it. We've been introduced through gangs, through music and film for the most part. If you didn't live in LA, you didn't know what gangs was like that. LA, Chicago, you didn't know what that was. So that got introduced when we started to see movies like Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society and then NWA and Snoop, that introduced that to everybody. And it was interesting. It was attractive, right? People get introduced to different types of drugs and different things of that nature because they hear it in music. Like I heard about Scissor and Lean. I didn't know what that was. I'm hearing it in the record. And then now you start to understand, oh, this is actually cough syrup that they do in Houston, Texas, and they put in Jolly Ranchers inside of it, and you see, and it slows down. Now you understand like why they play their music slow. And then it's like, oh, they slow down because they actually, they're like, it's like a dope fiend state, right? Like they're slow when they actually do it. So that would make sense why they, when they're listening to it, because of the, so these are all negative, but just how you can learn from negative things, you can also reverse engineer that and have positive things. So it's like, for me, I was watching movies that weren't kid movies, but it was interesting to me, like Barbarians at the Gate and Wall Street. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other new movies that have come out over the last 30 years. But be intentional when you're having movie night with your kids. Be intentional about having some level of entertainment that's also going to open their eyes and be educational, especially in the world of business. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that are geared towards that and still entertaining. All of those movies, Barb, even Boiler Room, it wasn't the most, you know, it's talking about like some level of criminal activity, but it's still interesting.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's interesting to learn, like, then they on Wall Street, they doing this, like, this is crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So now then you have talks after that, like conversations, like what you think about that? Like, you, do you ever know about that? You know about stockbrokers, you know about stuff like that. So that's also vitally important as well. These are little things, like we're going to talk about like lesson planning and stuff like that. But a lot of time, what I'm trying to say is that it's not as complicated as you might make it out to be. We can make this more complicated if you want, but for the average person, you know, you're working all day, you don't have time to really, you know, be a full-time professor, but you can still have time to actually open your mind to different worlds and open your kids' minds just by being a little bit more intentional.
Yeah, and I would challenge, I'll second that. And what we talked about earlier, being passed down, right? Like having a parent who was an entrepreneur, that helps, right? Because it's a different landscape than the average person that we're looking at it. Like our parents, both in our lives, I watched my dad go to work. I don't know what he did, but I know he worked for somebody, right? That was it. But I want to challenge educators and school leaders, right? I think what you're saying is very important about the trips that we're putting in front of our young adults. When we were in middle school, maybe you weren't even there yet. They had one trip when I was in middle school, and it was to Scare Straight. That was the trip, like getting permission to slide. And I'm like, why are they people signing up to go to this? Right, scare you, like you go into a prison, the prison, they're there to scare you, to make sure that you never come in here. But I'm like, yo, wouldn't it be more advantageous to show us something that's positive? And so when it was our turn to come around, when we were doing the program, it was like, nah, we're going to take them to the African burial ground. That's in New York City. That's easy, right? We're going to take them to Harlem. We're going to take them to the museums. We're going to take them to the MoMA. We're going to take them to Wall Street. We want to show them different aspects of life. So educators, like, if you don't talk to your colleagues, whatever your team, your grade level is, or you don't talk to school leadership, those trips to the movies, that's cool. But is it going to advance them, right? Tesla's in your neighborhood. Are you going to be able to now go talking about innovation and see what they can help bring to your school? When I was in elementary school, they took us to McDonald's because that was a local business in the neighborhood. They didn't tell us how to own it. They was like, yo, there's Happy Meals you can do. My kids, they go to trips, they're going to PepsiCo. Well, why they go? I have to explain to them, like, that's important. That's a Fortune 500 company, right? This, challenge educators, challenge school leaders and parents, PTA. Here's where I want our kids to go. This is the type of things I want my kids to be seeing. Everybody plays a part in it.
And then also, I think it's important too to play off your child's interest, because it's every child is interested in something. So if you got a girl, they might be interested in makeup, right? Okay, that's cool. Now introduce, there's a lot of people that's making money, influencers, entrepreneurs in the makeup space, right? Even Rihanna, you can like, okay, write a report. I don't want to know about Rihanna's music. I want to know about Fenty. I want you to explain to me the business behind this, right? Like, that's something that they're already interested in. If they're interested in makeup, they don't want to learn about cars. That might not be interesting to them, right? But everybody's interested in something, and everything is a business. So it's like, all right, if your kid is interested in music, now expose them to the business side of music. If your kid is interested in cars, expose to them the business side of cars. Your kid is interested in makeup, expose fashion, expose them to the business side of that, right? Like, that's another way too, because it's like 9 times out of 10, you're going to be more interested in learning about something on the business side if you actually have interest in it. Yeah. Even sports. If you're interested in basketball, you can play basketball, but also learn about who Rich Paul, you got to tell me who Rich Paul is. You got to tell me about guaranteed contract versus not guaranteed. Like, we're going to have a sports conversation. We're going to talk about, it's going to be interesting because you're interested in basketball, but this is going to be a business conversation as opposed to just who scores the most points.
That's a fact. That's a fact. And I love the makeup thing, because it's like, yo, they like makeup. Hey, Selena Gomez, you just became a billionaire off that. Or, hey, we're going to Sephora. Is this a publicly traded company? Right. These are the conversations. You're already doing them, right? Like Ulta Beauty. This is a publicly traded company. You know how much money you're spending there in a year? If you got a teenage daughter, like, come on. It's already happening, right? You're already a consumer of it. Like you said, it starts, I'm glad we started with mindset, because it starts with the mindset, understanding that this is a business and somebody owns this business. In fact, we're helping this business every time we shop here. So be intentional about it. Like, if it's already part of your natural, you don't have to go like, hey, we're going to, nah. If you're doing these things already, if you're dropping them off at the mall and they're shopping at these stores, these are opportunities. These are like, when you try to take that olive branch, like, it's there. You got to take advantage of it. But you have to have an understanding and education as well.
Well, another thing that you can do is, so getting a little bit more on the technical side, if they're interested in something, another way to gamify this situation is to work with them, or you could just have them do it, but create a business plan for a business that they want to start, right? And this is easier to do now than ever because of artificial intelligence. So you can literally go on ChatGPT or any of these sites and just put a business plan together, right? You could just say what you want and it'll put a business plan together for you. Now you go through it with them, right? So now it's like, all right, this is the business plan, but now I got to explain. Do you know what profit and loss is? No, now you got to explain it. And if you don't know yourself, now you got to research it, right? And it's like, do you know what a target market is? Because they could just say, I want to start a car business and I want to sell 1,000 cars. You ChatGPT going to give you a business plan. If that's not learning, but now looking at it is learning, right? So the idea, you don't even really got to, because now when you say, okay, no, this needs to be done, but just going through the business plan itself is an education, because you're going to learn what a target market is. You're going to learn what is marketing. Now I got to explain this. So going through that line item, now you say, okay, now do this. And you could kind of tie it to something. All right, if this passed the check, then I'm going to, you got an entrepreneur in your family, you got somebody, he's going to be the judge. Right. If he says this is a good business and he's going to invest in it, now you win. If he says it's not a good business and he doesn't like the idea, then you got to go back to the drawing board and you got to make it more appealing. Right. Like, that's a good way to kind of learn about business from a technical standpoint. And like I said, it's easier now to do than ever, because all you got to do is tell any AI app to do it and it'll spit out a detailed skeleton of a business plan.
Yeah, and you're watching it too. It's not like this is some far-sketched idea. Like, if you're from the Bronx and you're watching Kai, yo, that dude's from your neighborhood, right? Like, this is the most popular guy in any media form, right? You can put any actor or even athletes, they're coming to see him. John Cena came to his basement. It wasn't the other way around. Kevin Hart sat in his basement. It wasn't, you know what I mean? Nicki Minaj, they're all in his basement. This is a kid from the Bronx. I'm watching some of my former students with him. Like, this is obtainable, and so you can do it. What they're learning, and I see that he's learning now, is the business behind it, right? Like, yes, I have this popularity. Yes, I have this attention. How I create business around it. So it's definitely tangible for us.
It always works better when you gamify education. Always works better in multiples or groups. That's vitally important.
As we said, the project based.
So it's like, if you have multiple kids, it's better to have two kids doing it against each other. What's even better is if you have a team. So now if you bring a bunch of kids together for Thanksgiving or whatever, right? And now you have three teams of three, right? And now they all have to present plans. And now you decide which team wins. That's even better than them working individually, because now they actually get to talk to each other. We used to do that when we was in the classroom and just have different stuff for the kids to do. And now they're having conversations with each other. Everybody's engaged. That helps the learning process even more, and it makes it even more competitive. Yeah. It's very important to have these competitive aspects to it, because gamifying it is good, but competition is even better.
Yeah. And that competition doesn't even have to be in an athletic field. And a lot of kids don't have athletic prowess, and so they're able to compete in the classroom, and that makes it even better. But like, as you're saying it, I'm thinking to myself, like, what are we going to do at our gatherings, at Christmas, at Thanksgiving? You know what we're going to do? We're going to see who can dance the best.
Right, and that's our issue.
We're going to see who can dance the best. We're going to see who can freestyle. We want to see who got the best, who can put this TikTok together and see if we can go. That's what we're going to do, and we've done that for so many years. Like, we got to change it. We got to challenge ourselves. Like, this is all right. We've been entertained long enough. We got to educate ourselves. We got to get ahead. And if you're gathering as a family, what better time?
Right. And I think the competition point is really lands well, because business is competition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's this duel that happens in business. When we get young people, that attractiveness of competition, this grows legs. It's transferable to business in real life. So getting young people together in a competition space to figure out how can I be better than the next business is something that will actually carry as they look forward and try to become business owners. And one of the things that I would also add to dissecting, to your point, Rashad, in terms of a big piece is not only understanding why a business would work, but why a business would not work. Getting young people to start understanding, when we talk about entrepreneurship, what are the pitfalls, what are the drawbacks, and what are the disadvantages of a business as they get older, helps them understand business better. Because oftentimes people have a great idea, but they can't execute on those things, or they don't understand the constraints. So getting young people to also not only say, okay, I have this business plan, but what are the drawbacks of this business plan? What would lead this not to work? How would this fail in the market? And this helps you become a better business planner as a young person. So not only thinking about the pros of something, but always thinking about the cons and how do you plan for those as well.
Now, I did this. So there was a Business Skills Olympics that happens every year. And it was like 30, I think it probably still exists, but like 20, 30 high schools from the area that we live in county. And they would come together, and it was in Merrill Lynch, one of these big Wall Street banks. And they would come on the campus, and they were given a Harvard case study. Right. And they had to dissect the Harvard case study, and they had to present their ideas on it, how they would solve the problem. Right. And they break into teams. Everybody gets the same case study, and they break into teams. And then they have a coach. And I was the coach for my school. And we go over different, you know, pros, cons, what, you know, and then everybody's got to, you know, how you're going to present the information. So this is not just theoretical. This actually happens in real world, right? And it's a way to learn. And it's when you are at competition against other people, it's been proven. This is why, like, most employers, they hire athletes before they hire somebody. Bro, like, I've known this firsthand, especially any sales job. If anybody's working a sales job, on your resume, if you've played a sport, you're at a bigger advantage than somebody that does not play a sport. This is what people have told me, because they're like, if you played a sport, that lets them know that you have some level of competition. You're a competitive person. You've been able to navigate and work with teammates. You have worked with coaches. These are all things that are going to help you in real world scenarios. So drilling that and making that, you know, that competition while you're actually gamifying, it doesn't even have to be something big. Like, we should do it, you know, give kids Chipotle. So you don't got to give them, like, you know, crazy amount of money. You'd be surprised. Like, you know, you give kids Chipotle, give kids a gift card, give kids, you know, $50 for a video game, something like that. Like, that'll make them go crazy. Like, they'll do anything, like, to try to win that. So
they doing the right. Pizza party once a market period. I'm like, we gonna wait a whole 3 months to get a pizza party?
Yeah, got it. Incentivize learning. But okay, but I think we have a couple of. So I think it'd be cool if we do this, because we do have a couple of even videos from our curriculum. Right. So maybe we can show a couple videos and then we can kind of talk about the video after we show it.
Yeah. Trav, you want to just tell them about Earners Academy before we even kick them off?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. We'd love to. Well, Earners Academy, of course, is from the minds of the two gentlemen right here, Troy and Rashad. The goal of Earners Academy is to bring the financial information, revolutionize financial information, bring it right into schools. So what we've done is we've just got hours of footage and tape on these two gentlemen, two bright minds in the financial space. And we made it digestible and fun and engaging for young people to really tackle important issues in finance. What separates us from out there is tackling really core issues in financial literacy. So we're just not teaching the skills. We're building a strong knowledge base as well. And I think that's really important. It's not, you can't do skills without knowledge. So we're building knowledge, we're building skills, and we're building a history around financial education so young people can actually be smart about decision-making, understand the past, so that they can actually create a bright future. And that's what Earners Academy is. So it's a really raw curriculum, deeply connected to hip hop. And I think that's important too for the relatability. And these two gentlemen, Troy and Rashad, y'all are really spoken a lot about how y'all are connected to hip hop, what hip hop means to both of you. So we had to add that element in there as well, because again, that's where we come from. And we've learned so much from hip hop. There've been so many financial gems connected to hip hop that we wanted to add this curriculum so it could be representative of the two of you and how you grew up. So with that, we have Earners Academy. We hope young people across the nation love it, and teachers also. So this is a tool that we want each one to teach one. We want teachers and students to learn financial literacy together as a community, as it should be.
Yeah, for sure. This is something that, you know, a labor of love, really, to really kind of changed the game for education. It took us 2 years to actually complete this, and hours and hours of video and curriculum when it comes to, you know, school teaching. And even if you're educating and you're not even educating on finances yourself, we try to make it an easy teach. So yeah, let's go through some.
Yeah,
if we can, then we can talk about
video. Yeah. Let's give them a preview. This is the first time anybody's ever seen it. So we're excited about it. You want to start with the supply chain? You want to do that?
Let's do it.
Here you go.
So when you look at investing, you want to look at a variety of different factors to see if an investment makes sense or not. One of the things that makes a company a strong company is if it can create an ecosystem. As Nipsey Hussle once said, vertical integration.
We're trying to get as vertically integrated as possible.
So one of the companies that have done the best job of this is Apple. When you look at Apple, it's not just a phone provider,
It's an actual ecosystem, from the music that it has, from the app store, from the communication on FaceTime. Hey, Troy, we have to teach them about the importance of assets over liabilities, from the ability to watch social media on your phone, which is an iPhone. All of these things are encompassed inside the technology and the device that Apple has created, which makes it an extremely valuable product and something that is extremely hard to leave. Most people cannot leave their iPhone because there's so much data, so much information, so much uses that you actually do on your iPhone without actually realizing it. So a phone turns into a camera, turns into a studio, turns into a listening for music, so many different varieties. So when you're looking at an investment, you want to see if it's just a one-off product or if it's an actual ecosystem that is in play here. And also we want to look at supply chain. So the supply chain are the companies that work with a company to make sure that these technologies are sufficient and running. So when you look at a car like Tesla, you can invest in Tesla stock because we see Teslas on the road. But we all know that Tesla is a smart car, right? It doesn't use gas. It's very efficient. It has extremely high technology. So one of the things that you want to look at as an investor is, how can I invest not only in Tesla, but the companies that's powering Tesla? This goes back to the chip conversation, right? So who are making the chips that are going inside of Tesla? Who's making the battery that goes inside of Tesla? Who's making the charging stations that will power all electric vehicles moving forward? These are critical thinking items that you have to implement to think outside the box to become a very successful investor.
Yeah, man, that was a nice preview. That was a debut for the world. Shout out to everybody that's locked in, and we appreciate all the positive feedback. Yeah, man, how you feel watching?
Nah, it's dope, man, for sure. Shout out to, you know, Travis and the whole team for actually, you know, putting that together and editing it, and it's dope. And I think that, you know, so just to kind of give you guys some perspective, how the curriculum works, it's like, we'll show that, but then there's curriculum. So to kind of, we'll talk about it in real time. It's important. This goes back to just education, right? It's important, I think, to use things that people identify with when explaining things. That's another teaching method, right? So it's like, okay, so we could talk about supply chain, but what does that mean, right? But now when you say, okay, well, you can actually look at an iPhone, which everybody has an iPhone, right? And now you can actually break it down in that manner. It's a lot easier, right? Even the context of vertical integration. Rest in peace to Nip, right? And we talked about, like, you know, now when you could actually say, okay, like, if you have a device and on that device is a camera and a video that you're going to capture all your moments and you're going to look at archived, right? It's like a vault almost. And also on that same device is a banking where you actually can use to send money and collect money, right? And also on that same device is where you're going to actually be notified about everything that happens in your life via Instagram and on Google. And also on that same device is you're going to be able to communicate to people all over the world, either text, call, or FaceTime. And also on that same device is going to be your entertainment, because you're going to listen to music on this device. You're going to watch movies on this device. You're going to watch YouTube on this device, right? I can go on and on. There's no need to ever leave this device, right? Whereas now I can explain that in a different way, where it's like, okay, now if you had one phone, previously a phone was just a phone, right? Like, there was a time when a phone was an actual phone, and that's the only thing you did was actually make phone calls on that phone. If you wanted to take a picture, you had a camera. And that camera, only thing that it did was actually take a picture. And then if you wanted to listen to music, you had a Walkman or a CD player, right? And the only thing that did was play music. And if you wanted to watch something visually, you had a television. And the only thing that television did was play movies. Now, you have five different separate devices, right? Now, you have to go to five different things to actually utilize all those different things. So with the genius of this, they combined everything in one, right? So now you never have to leave your phone. But from a business standpoint, they actually merged five different businesses in one. They actually merged thousands of different businesses into one, because all of those things that I just named are either obsolete or almost obsolete, right? Unless you're a professional photographer, nobody has cameras. Nobody has like real, like those little Polaroid cameras. Nobody has cameras, right? Unless you're like really taking real pictures. Nobody has Walkman. Nobody has an iPod anymore, right? They're listening to their music on the phone. People still have TVs, but even that's kind of a dying model at a certain level, because unless you're home, and most people are watching when they're not home, right? So it's like a lot of things have just completely gone away because of one thing. They were actually able to streamline the process and make it much more efficient. So that's a business lesson, but it's easier to understand when I'm giving tangible examples from a product that we all know very well, as opposed to me trying to just give, you know, hypothetical, you know, very far out there things that is going to be difficult to digest, and you're not going to be able to relate to it.
Okay. Yeah. And it speaks to a couple of things. And that was one of the goals, is when we were creating it. It's like, we want education to be responsive. Right. Like, we don't want it to be relevant, because relevancy changes. And so like a product like what Apple has created that keeps evolving. Right. Like the Vision Pro could be the next thing we're talking about, or the next thing that they innovate could be part of that curriculum, which makes it very unique. And for like people who are in education, yes, it does have the do now with the lesson. It does have the learning objectives. It does have the group activities. It does has the teacher's model. It does have a conclusion. It does have questions inside. And so what was beautiful when we were able to watch it is that we're watching the educators learn as they're teaching. So both people are learning at the same time, which makes it very unique in a classroom setting. But what it does is that it empowers kids to go home and now tell their parents, their grandmothers, and their cousins what they've learned about. And now that changes conversation as well. So it tackles a number of things, not only inside the building, but in our community. And that's what education is, right? When we talk about schools, that's usually the center of your community. Right. And what happens inside of there, the learning that's happening, can be infectious. And I feel like we've kind of nailed it with that, if I do say so myself. And the next thing you talked about, and we'll probably maybe show this video, is they've created a moat. Right. Like, that's a competitive advantage. Right. The brand loyalty, when you say everybody, I know you like you're just saying it, not meaning that no other phone exists in the world, but majority of the people, when you think iPhone, you think an iPhone. So they've created a brand loyalty around their company, and it's the reason why they're a $3 trillion company. It's the reason why people will go out and buy the iPhone 16. And like you said, at this point, people are making music videos with their phones. So even having the high-tech phone, it might not even be necessary in the next 5 to 10 years. And so they've created the brand loyalty for people to come back, and the product is really good, which has actually hurt them a little bit when we're talking about, hey, if I have the 14, do I need to get the 16? But those are good problems. What it does for what you do now is to innovate. But these are all lessons that you can learn just from something simple as talking about a device that you have in your pocket.
And if I can, first shout out to both of you in terms of really putting your knowledge on the curriculum. But educators, parents, you got to advocate for this, because as you see, we just talked about ecosystems and supply chains. That's not happening in schools. It's not happening into many financial literacy curriculum. So we're going deep into financial topics that a lot of people don't think our kids are ready for. If our kids can learn calculus, they can learn this. So I just want to just push everybody to say go for it, because we're going to get into the power of the moat video, but we don't really teach that. We teach the stock market game. We're going past that. We're saying that our young people can handle the tough, the business and economics behind why stock prices go up and down. And I think that's a real clear distinction about what we're doing over here. Like we really believe that young people can handle and grapple with really complex business and economic discussions when we talk about the stock market. So we're not playing the stock market game over here. We're really having business conversations, bringing those to the forefront of our classroom, and make it digestible and chunkable so that teachers and students can have real conversations. So I wanted to jump in that before we went to the power of the moat.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things I've learned that, right? In the summer when we were teaching about stocks, it's cool to do the paper trading, but they need more. If they don't understand why they're doing it, if they don't see the incentive of why they're doing it, it doesn't become something that becomes naturally part of their everyday life. If you do something for 90 days, right? It's like going to practice. You're playing a sport. It becomes part of your daily routine, right? Your eating habit. Those things become part of your daily routine. What you're reading, it becomes part of your daily routine. If it's not part of your daily routine and it's something that we're doing for 1 week out the year, it doesn't become something that becomes digestible, doesn't stick to them. So that's why this is important, because not only is it just for the secondary education, but it can last from a half a year or it can be spread out through the entire year. And so it's something that's really substantial that can really just change how they think. But let's jump to one more if we can.
Let's do it. If we're going to do one more, I think the asset liabilities is very important.
You want to do that?
Yeah.
All right, let's do that.
What are assets and liabilities? Well, this is something that's very near and dear to us. Not only is it our company slogan, but it's our lifestyle mantra. An asset is anything that adds value to a person, a business, or a company. The more assets you have, the more your company's worth. And yes, people can be assets because they can add value to all of the above. Some examples of assets are real estate, stocks, commodities such as silver, gold, platinum, collectibles, trading cards, sneakers, jewelry, some cars. All these things can appreciate over time and add value to somebody's overall net worth. A liability? Well, that's the complete opposite. That's anything that removes value from a person, business, or company. So the more liabilities you have, the less your company's worth, and the less productive you will be if you're the person that's a liability or that has to deal with someone that is a liability. And some examples of liabilities are taxes, loans, mortgages, cars, right? Sometimes we have a high car note that'll cost us more than we can afford, or people who aren't as productive that they need to be inside of our business, which will eventually cost us money.
So that's important, because that's our slogan, that's silver liabilities. And explaining that in detail is vitally important to children. I had my shirt on yesterday, and I was my son was getting some training, and the guy, one of the guys, the coach, he was like, his dad used to tell him every single day, you're either going to be an asset or a liability. And it's become part of the vernacular for the mm-hmm. culture. But just explaining that, even outside of business, as far as asset over liability, you got to kind of drill things in people's minds. That's vitally important. This is why mantras are important, right? You say the same thing over and over and over again, you get to learn it, right? And it stays with you, right? So when you start to, you know, drill these things in young people's minds, they learn assets and they learn liabilities. That's two of the most important words that they're going to learn, because it's going to carry with them in so many different variables in life outside of finances. They're going to make decisions and they're going to say, okay, is this person an asset to me or is this person a liability? Is this going to be negative to my life or is this going to be positive to my life, right? And just learning those two words can actually change your life, because you start to look at things differently. You start mm-hmm. to actually evaluate. That's the whole point. It's an accounting term, as far as on a balance sheet, you have liabilities and assets. Actually, on the accounting sheet, the assets is below liabilities, but for purposes of playing with the words, it's assets over liabilities in our world. But when you start to look at life in that lens, you look at life completely different, because you realize that it's a win-lose game. Life is a win-lose game, right? And you can only lose so much before you lost, right? So when you look at it from that standpoint, everything that you do, you're tallying it up in the back of your mind. Like, damn, okay, I'm buying this, but this is taking money out of it, and I'm not getting anything from this. You can only do that so much before you have a negative bank account. I got three friends, and then none of them are doing anything with their life. They're smoking weed all day. They just, you know, fucking around. All right, well, eventually, you're going to be that fourth one, right? You got three liabilities in your life. It's only a matter of time before you become a liability yourself. You can't have every single person around you that's doing nothing and think that you're going to be the one person that's going to outshine the whole situation. No, you're just going to be it. So explaining that to them on a financial level But like I said, it was crazy because like he said his dad told him that every morning, you're either going to be a liability or an asset in this world. That was the mantra before he walked out of the house. You're going to be a liability or you're going to be an asset. Don't be a liability, be an asset today. Just be an asset. It's anything you do, just be an asset. Don't take ad, right? It's a simple philosophy, but really getting kids to understand that, I think is vitally important. Don't be a liability in life, ladies and gentlemen.
Please.
Be an asset.
Please.
If you don't do anything else, be
an asset. Do us all a favor.
And we're going to do some more.
You want to do one more?
Yeah.
Let's do one more for the people.
Yeah, let's show off so that they know they got to get this in their school. Right?
Let's do it.
So what is a moat? Well, a moat is an economic advantage that companies put in place to make sure that they separate themselves from their competition. It's a strategy that they use to distance themselves inside their industry or their field. And companies do this all the time. It's a long-term play that they use to make sure that they always stay ahead. And there's different ways that they implement this economic moat. The first one is brand loyalty. And when we say brand loyalty, that means that a company has put in the minds of its customers or its users that they have the best product, the best service, and the best quality, no matter the price. And when I think of companies like that, Apple is the first one that comes to mind. And here's why. Because every year, legions of people will support this product because they believe that Apple is the leader in technology, and with good reason. Every year, there will be a new MacBook, a new phone, a new tablet, or a new watch. And people are going to buy because, again, they think and they feel that this is the best product. They've done such a great job with their brand loyalty that when people receive green text messages, you know what that feels like. When you get a green text message, there's an emotional feeling that comes with it. Now imagine that. When people have blue text messages, you feel great. When you see a green one, you're like, somebody's not part of the family. That alone tells you how strong that this brand loyalty is. And it doesn't look like that's going to change anytime in the near future, which makes Apple a perfect company to invest in long-term because of its brand loyalty and its hardcore diehard fans. Another strategy is cost advantage. And this means that a company can produce prices that are lower than its competition. And when I think about a company that does that very well, I think of Walmart. So Walmart has a couple things that work for it. Number one, they have millions of transactions. And we know what millions of transactions means, millions of customers. And with millions of customers, that means you have millions of people inside of your database. And that means you can market to those people at a very, very low rate. And so when customers come into Walmart, the first thing that they're looking for are lower prices. That's what the brand is known for. So if I'm somebody that's coming into that space, I can't serve my customers at the same price because I won't be able to make enough profit. Why? Because I don't have the customer base that they have, and I don't have relationships with the type of products and product companies that they have inside of their stores. That's my disadvantage. And so Walmart knows that, and they lower their prices, which brings them more customers and allows them to have a large customer base long term. So cost advantage is another way that people and companies create economic moats. Another way that people create economic moats are size advantage. And when I'm talking about size advantage, I'm talking about companies that are so large that it's tough to infiltrate the industry. When I think of a company like that, Nike comes to mind.
We can't give it all. We can give you some.
Vitally important. And before we leave, let's play the stock one too, because I think that's something that most people will be most interested in.
Let's give them a little bit of this.
Stocks are ownership of a company. So you have two different types of companies. You have a private company, which is privately held. So me, Troy, we have a company called Earn Your Leisure, right? We privately own that company. We make all the decisions. The profit comes in. We pay the employees. That's our company. You have a public company where anybody can become an owner. So you have companies like Apple, like McDonald's, like Nike, all these companies that you're very familiar with, right? No one person owns these companies. These companies are public companies. What does that mean? That means that they're publicly listed on a stock exchange. So there's two major stock exchanges. There's the NASDAQ, which has a lot of technology companies, and then there's the New York Stock Exchange. So when you see Wall Street and you hear about these things, this is what they're referring to. So as a company is public, that means that they have stock. Stock are shares in that company. You could think about it as a huge pizza pie. So if you have a huge pizza pie with a million different slices, right? Let's say each one of those slices represents ownership in the company. So if I own one share out of that million, that means that I'm a owner in that company. Now, as the company goes up in value, my stock price will go up in value. As my stock price goes up in value, I make money. If the company does not do well and goes lower in value, then that means the stock price will go down.
Yeah, it kind of gives us that feeling of who's in the classroom again, man. This is like almost 15 years now ago where this is what it was like in the band room in Woodland. Shout out to everybody that was part of Operation Crossroads. But yeah, man, getting back to the roots of where it started is vitally important to us. And like I said, it's a labor of love, man, because it all starts in education. And this is where our journey kind of started. So yeah. That was a little sneak preview, man.
Sure. I think the stock thing is interesting because I know a lot of people ask, that's a major question, like teaching kids about stocks. So that's why I want to show that video. But you can literally just duplicate what that video says as far as the pizza pie, the private company, the public company, but then even giving them different tasks as far as you go on Yahoo Finance and you just print out a sheet of like, 52-week low, 52-week high. Get them like a couple of companies that they're already familiar with, like Nike, Apple, Amazon, whatever, right? And then, just have them just fill in like what's the 52-week low, what the 52-week high is, what is the ticker, right? And then you just explain it to them like, all right, the ticker is the abbreviation, right? That's what stocks, they're not their full name on the market, their letters, right? Then you explain, okay, the 52-week low is the lowest that it was for that week and then for that year. And then the 52-week high is the highest that it was for that year, right? And you explain, okay, if the stock goes up, then that means that if you invest in money, then your value is going to increase. If the stock goes down, then your value is going to decrease. Then you can even do like some mathematical equations, like, okay, if it goes from 50 to 100, then what's the percentage increase of that? Mm-hmm. Well, it's 100%, mm-hmm. Right? Okay, well, now, so teaching, that's important lesson, entry level to just kind of learn what stocks are, because a lot of adults don't even know about stocks. So yeah, you could teach them on a very elementary level to kind of just have them understand things. And like I said, now you can even, what you can also do is create a stock journal for them if they want to, track stocks, their favorite stocks, like, okay, like every week we're going to track the price of Apple, right? You're going to track the price of Apple and see, what it does over the course of a year, right? And in between that, you're going to look at different news articles that come out and different things that, and then you introduce new things to them over the course of time, yeah. PE ratio, stuff like that. You don't do that right away, but you can kind of, teach them over the course of time, but you start with the basics as far as what a stock is, the difference between a private and publicly held company, the different stock exchanges, the abbreviations that's used to categorize the stocks on the market, the highs, the lows, the current price, what time the stock market opens, what time the stock market closes, stuff like that. Yeah. Is very elementary, but it gives them a good understanding of at least, the beginning level of stocks. And you'd be surprised, like just having that information puts you ahead of a lot of people, even a lot of adults who have no idea about stocks at all.
Yeah. And that's what I think the responsive piece of it makes it so unique. And the market changes every day, right? So if the stock market is open Monday through Friday from 9:30 to 4, it's moving. Right. So by the time you come into school the next day, things have changed. So Monday is not going to look like what Friday looked like. Right. And Tuesday is not going to look what Thursday looks like. So it gives an opportunity as an educator to now really track it, not only just for a day, but for a week, for 2 weeks, for a month, for a marking period. You could track it through the entire school year if you like. And I've seen educators who actually had a little ticker that went inside their classroom just because they wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of the stocks that they were invested in. And you can change it and adapt it, but it's happening in real time, right? When you're talking about private and publicly traded, they're watching it in real time, right? If I ask them about Twitter, well, something happened with Twitter in the last year, right? That used to be a company that was publicly traded. There's a guy named Elon Musk who bought it, and now it's a privately traded company. So the things that happen in real time, we can be responsive in education in real time, which again makes it unique and unlike any education that we've seen, especially that I've seen, when it's history and you learn history and it's like, oh, we got to wait to update the textbooks and who's in those textbooks and what's really being taught. And so it's adaptive, it's responsive. And for me, I think it's the new way education is going to look in the future.
And I think just to put a nice bow on it, it's really, as you see with the videos, everybody out there, the audience, look how engaging it is. When we talk about gamification, when we talk about engagement and really getting young people connected to the stock market, to business, this curriculum does it. Like we pull out all the stops to make sure that this curriculum is connected to their culture. And to your point, Troy, it's evergreen. So as the market changes, as things change, we can create videos, we can create case studies that connect what's happening now. So this doesn't become a dinosaur. And I think that's important. So we have to get this, the bottom line is we have to get young people this curriculum, get these young people to hear from both of you so that we can really build a new financial group of young people that can really move this country in a really amazing way. So we're just really excited to bring this into school. Don't let your kids miss out on this.
We had you in the Matrix.
Missed out so much more. Go ahead.
I said they had you in the Matrix for like 2 seconds, but you're back now.
Oh yeah. Sorry about that. But again, we don't want to miss out. Black and brown people, we've missed out on revolutions in the past. We can't miss out on this. We missed the technological revolution. We didn't participate in that. Financial revolution is here. You see two guys that are leaders of this new school. Like, let's jump in. Bring these guys into your classroom. You can have real up-to-date information about financial literacy to start the discussion that we can bring from the classroom to home. It makes no sense why we won't have financial education in our schools. Parents, go to your school, advocate. If your kids are not learning about money, they're going to fall victims to money. Consumerism is around us. We've been saying this, these two gentlemen have been saying this for a long time. It's time that we take heed and bring this to our kids. They have nothing but time on their side.
Yeah, for sure. And I think even outside of that, like I said, just for regular parents that's just teaching their kids, you have to do it. It's great if we can have it in the schools, but even if it's not in the schools, you still got to have the responsibility of educating your child. And this was just some tips to kind of help you get started. And then from there, it's like, you know, you learn from there. Like, you know, but I feel like it's a good foundation at the very least from just the gamification aspect, game night, the more technical stuff when it comes to how to explain stocks, want to provide framework for you, right? But it's important that you continue your educational journey and you learn as much as possible as a parent, because the more you learn, the more you'll be able to educate your child. But at least you have some framework to work off. That's important.
Yeah, absolutely important. So, we provided free education on our podcast for 6 years now with Earn Your Leisure. And so if you ever need a resource to go back and hear some of the information, it's there. Market Mondays is a great source as well. So we're not going to stop providing education. It's been our passion. It's been our purpose. So we're going to keep providing it. But like you said, there's so many tools. And these are just some entry-level ones. But education is not relegated to just the school building, y'all. We have to be very cognizant of that. And Travis, I think you said it, man. If you're not learning about education, if you're not learning about finance, you're going to work for somebody who did. And so we got to make sure that we're on the end of that.
Definitely.
And Trav, so how can they get in contact with you, even if they want to learn more about the curriculum and everything? What's your contact info?
Yeah, just go to earnersacademy.org and just fill out the form right there, and we'll get right in touch with you.
There you have it. For all you school principals and advocators, Parent Teachers Association
yes.
members and superintendents, vitally important information.
Super, super important.
And then there's a bunch of great resources for parents as well. And we'll be laying out some more stuff. We do a different series on for parents. But like I said, the best thing I think parents can do is educate themselves. So as a parent, make sure you're educating yourself and everything that you learn, try to pass it down in a digestible, fun, relatable manner that involves competition and gamification.
Or learn with your kid, right? Like y'all can learn together. There's nothing more beautiful than that, man. When my kids know something I don't, I'm honored by it, right? Like when I get to learn from them, when I get to learn from students, it's like they're bringing something fresh. They ask a question that I have to go research. That sparks my brain. They're like, all right, they're thinking at a different level. They saw something differently. Now let me go do the research so I can bring it back to the classroom. So we should be doing the same thing inside our households.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. All right, guys. We will see you guys later. Take care.
All right, love is love, y'all. Peace.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Is the Chicken Big Mac still a Big Mac? It's got two chicken patties, the pickles, the lettuce, ooh, the cheese, the sesame seed bun, and it's got the sauce. It's not a Big Mac. Get it while you can. And participate in McDonald's for a limited time.